Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
He hung one. Edwin rockets it to deep left field and gone into the second deck. Oh, get that man an extra order of crab cakes. A two-out, two-run homer for Encarnacion, his 17th, and his month of June continues. 3-2 pitch, wind up the alley in right center field. That's the hit the Indians have been looking for. Lindor delivers. It's a two-out, two-run double. And a three-run fourth as the Indians now lead it 5-2.
And that ball is crushed. Back it goes. It is gone for Machado. And we are tied at 5. Line drive down the right field line. Base hit for Adam Jones. It's into the corner. Machado scores. Adam hustling at second base. He has an RBI double. And the Orioles have the lead at 6-5.
You run homer, it really hurts. Machado kind of took some good swings all night. We got a chance to win in the ninth, so you know, we went down fighting. And we made some mistakes, but we'll show up tomorrow and see if we can do a little better.
And the pitch to Seager.
Swing on it, driven to right field. And that will get down. One hop off the fence. Here comes Snitter at third. He scores, and the Mariners win it. They win it 5-4. Kyle Seager for the game winner here in Seattle.
Positives are Zinn pitched well, and the offense did a nice job of coming back from a two-run deficit late in the game, but obviously it wasn't enough.
LeBron didn't come back to Cleveland because of who they had at the owner, the coach, or the GM, and he's not going to leave Cleveland because of who they have at the owner, the coach, or the GM. It's all about the connections of his fans in Northeast Ohio, but winning. And winning's the most important thing here. So if whoever comes in gets them back to a finals level, perhaps gets them back to a championship level, that's the biggest thing that will keep LeBron James in the wine and gold. Anything less, and certainly any sort of regression, or a regression that seems connected to the bad timing of this GM move, that would be the thing that would signal perhaps he starts looking elsewhere.
Jimmy's always respected LeBron. He loves Kyrie, having played with him on the Olympic team. But I just talked to a couple team sources within the Bulls organization, and they said, it's still really unlikely because the Cavs don't really have a lot of assets. The Bulls want picks, high picks, and several young assets, controllable assets in return. The Cavs would have to get a third team involved.
It's not a value trade. They bring back Marco Bellinelli, who's a role-playing bench player, and Miles Plumlee, who has what a lot of people think is a bad contract. Saves some salary, but doesn't save a lot. It lowers their cap figure by about $5 million. But to me, this is the Hawks sending a signal that they are going into a full rebuild mode. The Lakers have to avoid the temptation here. The correct thing to do is not to make a trade with valuable assets to get Paul George. You think you've already got him. Don't make the mistake of having this momentum and feeling like you've got to trade one of the pieces that you don't want to give away to get him now. Show some patience. Even if Paul George comes to the Lakers this week, they're not getting past the Warriors in the West this year.
I do know that a few teams with picks ahead of the Knicks in this draft have reached out, and I assume that the first round pick in 2017 from those teams has been put on the table in any conversations for Porzingis. And I think obviously if you're thinking about trading Porzingis, you have to get back multiple first round picks for a player who's early on in his career in a controllable contract.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Holy cow. My goodness. I think maybe the worst thing for the National Basketball Association was the advent and the proliferation of fantasy sports. Because it seems like most NBA GMs right now are playing fantasy basketball. With the names flying the way that they are, free agent rumors, trade rumors, and much, much more. Honestly, it almost seems like we're just doing this for fun. And these aren't real people with real lives on real teams. Welcome to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Want you to be a part of our show at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. If you would prefer to tweet to the program, tweet to us at Sports Radio 106.5. If you prefer to Facebook comment to us, it's 106.5 The Ticket. And you can certainly reach us any and all of those ways. I mean, honestly, as we get started, we're going to talk to Rick Nolan coming up at about 3:35, about a half an hour from now, about all of these trade rumors, all of this incredibly chaotic situation that the Cavaliers, the defending Eastern Conference champions, can no longer call them the defending NBA champions, but the defending Eastern Conference champions, all of the the mess that they find themselves in now. How did they get there, and how do they get their way out of it? That is an even bigger question. So a lot to dive into. You heard a little baseball in the top of the montage there. Indians finally lost for the first time in seven games. Tough one. Heartbreaker. They were up 5-2. Ended up giving up that lead and losing 6-5. But they didn't really lose any ground to the Tigers, because the Tigers fell out in Seattle as well. But we will talk a little baseball coming up in a bit. But I do want to focus on the NBA as we approach the draft tomorrow night and the trade rumors that are going fast and furious. And not just the trade rumors, the trades that have already been confirmed. And we've got to talk a little bit about the innuendo that surrounds some of these trade rumors. What I mean by that is there's a lot of he said and she said, leading to a lot of perhaps very bad feelings among a lot of different people regarding the trades. And oh, by the way, meanwhile, just to marry our two biggest surrounding cities that we talk about, Detroit to the north and Cleveland to the east of Toledo, Chauncey Billups, Mr. Big Shot, met with Dan Gilbert, the Big Shot, once again today. And it looks like it is probably just a matter of negotiating the right price before Chauncey Billups takes over as the Cleveland Cavaliers' possible president of basketball operations, which means he would be hiring the GM, unless Dan Gilbert and he negotiate a deal just for Billups to be the GM. We've heard a number of different rumors over the course of the last 48 to 72 hours indicating that Chauncey Billups would be in line for a front office position of some type. Some of those stories and reports say president of basketball operations. He would then be given the authority to hire his own GM. Others say, no, he's just interviewing as the GM to replace David Griffin. Not exactly sure which way that's going to go, but it looks like the friendship, the longtime relationship that Gilbert has had with Chauncey is going to lead to some sort of a hiring there sooner rather than later. And I would imagine it would have to be before tomorrow's draft. Not that the Cavaliers have much to do with the draft itself, but it's just you need to have one person in charge rather than the five-headed monster that the Cavaliers have in charge of their front office right now. If anybody's calling to talk about trade possibilities, whether it be for Jimmy Butler to come to Cleveland, for Kevin Love, or any of those other things that we've heard tell of, they don't even know who to talk to, because there's nobody minding the store. There's five different kind of assistant managers all saying, I've got it. No, I'll get it. No, I'll get this one. You get that one. No, they got to get somebody in place and relatively quickly. Chauncey Billups, of course, currently working for ESPN, but he's got a great relationship, not just with Gilbert, but he's also apparently very close with Cavaliers coach Tyronn Lue. So that's where they are. Now, some of the latest rumors, so that we can kind of get you caught up as to where we are. We know that the Los Angeles Lakers cleared roughly $60 million in cap space by trading away the horrific contract they give to former Cav Timofey Mozgov, along with D'Angelo Russell. Earlier today it was finalized, for Brooke Lopez of the Brooklyn Nets. That deal is a very, very big deal because it's going to clear the space that the Lakers need when it comes time next year to sign Paul George as a free agent, if indeed they opt to wait until next year to sign Paul George as a free agent. The other option, of course, is to trade for Paul George, who wants to go to the Lakers right now. I happen to agree with Brian Windhorst, who in that montage of sound that you heard at the top of our broadcast said that the mistake here would be for the Lakers to be so antsy and so nervous and so anxious to get Paul George that they trade some of the very pieces that they will need to surround Paul George with when he gets there next year to try to get him for this year. And then, of course, putting the roster in jeopardy. That would be a mistake by Magic Johnson. Some say that would actually be the right thing to do because they don't want to run the risk of Paul George playing somewhere else this season and being happy there. Personally, I would not roll the dice there. If I was the Lakers, I would sit patiently and just wait for things to play out and sign him as a free agent next year. You'll have probably enough money, according to salary cap experts, probably enough money if they don't do anything stupid, talking about the Lakers for the rest of this offseason, to sign not one but two max level free agent contracts going into the 2018-19 season, one of which would be Paul George, and the other one of which would be, who could that be? Who else becomes a free agent, not this summer, but next summer? Yes, indeed, we will talk about the prospect of, and in my opinion, humble as it may be, the very strong likelihood of LeBron James leaving Cleveland for the second time in his career and going out west to join Paul George and first-round draft pick Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram, and forming the core of a team that they feel like could contend with the Warriors in the NBA's Western Conference as early as 1 year from now. That is where we are as far as those rumors go. To some other big names, want to get these things out there and try to process them and dissect them and get your opinion on them as well. The Houston Rockets now are apparently making a stronger push for Chris Paul. We heard already the one Texas team was looking at Chris Paul and trying to make a deal, trying to bring him to San Antonio, but now it's the Rockets. They apparently have four top-tier free agents in their sights for this summer as we approach the draft tomorrow. Number one, they're looking at Paul Millsap of the Atlanta Hawks. Number two, they're looking at Kyle Lowry, point guard of the Toronto Raptors, which would just further weaken the Eastern Conference. And then, of course, they're looking at both Chris Paul and Blake Griffin of the L.A. Clippers. One source close to the situation told ESPN to expect the Rockets to go hard after Chris Paul next month. I find that to be a fascinating scenario. I also find it to be a very smart scenario if you are indeed the Houston Rockets. James Harden, as we know, is the point guard. Even though he's listed as a shooting guard. He pretty much runs the offense. He has the ball in his hands. He's ball dominant, and that's the way he plays the game. That's why he averaged, like Russell Westbrook, nearly a triple-double this season. But he is probably better suited to play off the ball, to play as the two-guard, and play off of the wonderfully magical passing of the great Chris Paul. It would be something that would be very, very good for the Houston Rockets, because they do have a relatively solid, and I'm not saying better than the Warriors, but a solid Western Conference championship caliber roster if they added Chris Paul to the mix. If I was Chris Paul, however, and I was looking to move to from Los Angeles, the Clippers, to another team in the Western Conference, I would say, however, that my first choice would be with those San Antonio Spurs, because we all know that Tony Parker, his best days are behind him. He's injured, of course, got injured before the playoffs, or in the playoffs anyway, wasn't able to really contribute much in the fight against the Warriors. But Tony Parker being out, Patty Mills is certainly a nice fill-in. You add Chris Paul, still one of the best point guards in the game, and a different style of point guard than today's version of point guards. Russell Westbrook score first, Steph Curry score first, John Wall score first, Kyrie Irving score first. That's just the way James Harden score first. He's a pass-first point guard who can also score whenever the heck he wants to. To see Chris Paul running around with Kawhi Leonard on one side and with LaMarcus Aldridge doing damage down low on the other side, and with some of these shooters that they surround themselves with, that would be a very interesting challenge to the Golden State Warriors as well. So some big names being bandied about there. As to the local teams, Cushland, let me bring Cushland in. Normally I do my full monologue here before I talk to Mr. K. But Cush, before I get back into the Cleveland scenario with Central Division rivals, the Chicago Bulls and the Jimmy Butler rumors, is there any team that has been quieter in these trade conversations than the Detroit Pistons? I'm looking for Piston storylines here to include in our conversation, and I'm not finding anything. I mean, the Hornets are in, you know, the Hawks are moving, the Brooklyn Nets made a move. You got some of the teams that are bottom dwellers in the NBA making big noise during this trading period. And the Pistons, who I don't want to say they're a bottom dweller, but they were not a playoff team, so take it for what it is. But Pistons very, very quiet in all of this. Why do you suppose it is that Detroit has not been heard or seen from in any of these conversations?
Well, my first guess would be that they, for what it's worth, they do have a pick tomorrow, number 12 in the draft. The only real news in the last couple of days out of the Pistons is Aaron Baines declined his particular option, though the Pistons say they'd like to bring him back. They do have some early bird rights. That's one of those headache-inducing terms in the CBA. But
that's not a big move anyway.
Right.
What I'm saying is you and I spoke, you know, at length throughout the NBA season with some of our guests from Detroit, you know, some of the writers up there and broadcasters and others, and we talked about the roster. This is Stan's team. It's Stan Van Gundy's team. He put this together. He's the guy who runs the show. He shops for the groceries and coaches them up, et cetera, et cetera. And we kind of just figured, you know, as the season went on, it's pretty doggone clear this roster is not a good enough roster. And sooner or later, Stan Van Gundy is going to have to acknowledge that, or somebody else is going to have to acknowledge it and replace him. And I'm not saying that's imminent at all. But my point is, you know, a lot of teams are moving pieces to get better players. Look at the Nets. They had to move Brooke Lopez, but they got D'Angelo Russell, obviously on a very soft contract now because it's still his rookie contract, and they got Mozgov, et cetera. The Hornets making the move as well and getting Dwight Howard. There are teams that are in the, you know, kind of in the Pistons league, if you will, who are bringing on some pretty high-profile players to improve their rosters, and the Pistons are pretty much silent. Now, I don't know exactly what the salary cap situation is, but I would think that maybe some things are going on behind the scenes that are not making any of the NBA trade, wire news stories, because they are just, you know, quiet as can be as they just wait for their 12th pick tomorrow.
And that may be, and part of it is because I think any of the talk that we had, you know, back at the deadline and after that involving something with either Reggie Jackson or Andre Drummond, those have kind of probably quieted down given some of the other names. I mean, if you're one of these other teams, you know, for example, take a look at the what the Lakers and the Nets did with the Brook Lopez and Mozgov part, two, you know, big guys, and in that, I don't think they're looking for what a Drummond may necessarily be able to give them. And then we kind of feel like we know the story with Reggie Jackson. I think there's a lot of teams that may not really trust them. The Pistons were ninth in salary at $106 million this past season, assuming no big moves of any kind. They're on the books for about $96 this coming season. And then all those guys we mentioned, you know, Drummond signed for a couple more years. Same with Reggie Jackson, Tobias Harris, and Ish Smith, and you know, all the rest. So it's, they don't really have a whole bunch of flexibility. I would say one of the biggest things they have to figure out is what to do with KCP. He's entering his qualifying offer restricted free agent summer right now, but I don't think there's a lot of room for them to do much, because if they pretty much bring all the guys back that they currently have under contract by the notes that I'm reading, and then bring Kentavious Caldwell-Pope back, they're going to be over $100 million already then.
Yeah, and that's a roster that is completely underperforming that salary. That salary,
no question.
Total, that place, that ranking of ninth in the NBA, which is kind of the reason for my questions, and I just don't know how much flexibility there is. But they're not making much news whatsoever. And to me, I guess by not making any news, that's a little bit newsworthy. The Cavaliers continue to make lots of news. And guess what? So do the Chicago Bulls. And how do we put that? Well, Chicago is pretty much acknowledging that there is a trade market for Jimmy Butler, and they are open for business in the right circumstances. Remember, he's not a Paul George one-year rental. He is a two-year guy. He's
right.
Got 2 years left on his contract. However, as interested as the Bulls might be, and as interested as the Cavs might be, a very strange story has developed this afternoon. One that says that the Cavaliers players, unnamed, however, are warning Jimmy Butler don't accept a trade to come to this mess. The defending conference champions, three straight finals, and a championship, some of the players in Cleveland are reportedly telling Jimmy Butler, you want to avoid this mess. It's a volatile situation. You don't want to be a part of this. That is a stunning development, literally just this afternoon, and it's something we're going to talk to our friend Rick Nolan about coming up here after the Bottom of the Hour Sports Center. And as a matter of fact, on the way into the Bottom of the Hour Sports Center, what do you say we hook you up one more time with a pair of tickets to the Robert Easter Jr. fight? If you would like to go and attend the title fight against Denis Shafikov, World IBF Lightweight Championship fight, which will be at the Huntington Center on June 30th, be my sixth caller right now to 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, and we'll send you to the Robert Easter Jr. Denis Shafikov Championship fight. Rick Nolan, who covers the Cavaliers, joins us next to talk about all of those rumors. George, Butler, LeBron, Kyrie potentially asking for a trade, players telling Butler to beware, don't come to Cleveland, all of this mess. We'll try to sort it out with Rick Nolan coming up on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, 3:37 now, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. The NBA trading wire right now, honestly, it looks like somebody's FanDuel sheet. I mean, the owners, the general managers, player personnel directors, agents, players themselves on Twitter. Honestly, it's like they're all just playing fantasy football, and this isn't, or fantasy basketball, I should say, and this just isn't real. But it is. And joining us now to try to make some sense out of all of this on the eve of the NBA's draft is Rick Nolan, covers the Cleveland Cavaliers out in Cleveland for, well, a couple of newspapers, Medina Gazette and Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. Mr. Nolan, how are you, good sir?
Doing well, and I have not been on Twitter for 45 minutes, so God only knows. God only knows what has happened since I last looked, and it was crazy then, but things change by the minute here, and it indeed is extremely crazy.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I want to start with what's already happened and get your thoughts on what that could mean to situations going forward. The LA Lakers, as we know, very eagerly, pursuing Paul George. Obviously, Paul George, when he told the Indiana Pacers he was going to step away after the 2017-2018 season, it made him tradable right now. And that's not good enough for the Lakers, according to some. They're not going to wait for him to sign with them after this coming season. They want to get him right now. First of all, what do you think of that strategy, given the fact that they will have to trade away some of the assets that they would be better off surrounding him with when he gets there eventually? But second of all, the move involving D'Angelo Russell and Timofey Mozgov going out to the Nets for Brook Lopez, that apparently is going to help create a whole bunch of money under the cap space for them to sign people with, not just this season, but next off season. So what is your take on the Lakers' moves thus far, and they're obviously their pursuit of Paul George?
Without a doubt, they've positioned themselves and given themselves some options now. That the big question they have to face between now and tomorrow night is, do they part with that number two pick to get Paul George now? Or, do they roll the dice, take the number two pick, hope Lonzo Ball is a star, and still get Paul George later? I tend to think if I'm in their position, I might roll the dice a little bit, because there's still way more than Paul George from being away from being a title contender, even a playoff team. So they've got to get.
You'd roll the dice in what way? You'd roll the
I
dice.
I would not. I would
right
wait.
Now?
I would wait on Paul George till next year.
Gotcha,
and keep
gotcha.
Keep my number two pick, because they're going to need multiple stars to come there, and obviously the elite one being potentially, especially if you listen to national TV, LeBron James. But they'd still have to do a few more things in order to create room to get Paul George and LeBron. But there is at least interest again in the formerly only known team in LA that went on the back burner of the Clippers for a while. So I mean, at least there's people talking about the Lakers again.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about that. And you know, let's go to the second part of what you just talked about, which is kind of where I was going with this as well. According to, and as you pointed out, a lot of the national folks, the idea for Magic Johnson and the Lakers would be, certainly they're not going to part with their number two pick. If they were to make the move for Paul George, it would be to try to send 28 and maybe a Jordan Clarkson or somebody, or Julius Randle or somebody like that to Indiana to get Paul George right now, and they would still keep number two, setting up a kind of a core of Paul George. Lonzo Ball would be their pick at the number two. Brandon Ingram, who, of course, is a rising star. Whichever one, Clarkson or Randle, is still there. And then according to the national guys who crunch all the numbers, they would have enough cap space next season, next off season, to make that run with a max contract offer at LeBron James, to bring him to that George Ball Ingram group and think that's who we can take down the Warriors with. Not this coming season, but the season after.
Yeah, I know the Pacers are in a terrible bargaining position, but I don't see Julius Randle and late first round picks being anywhere near enough to get you Paul George today or tomorrow. I don't quite
even, even two late round picks because of that pick from Brooklyn. You know, if they have 27 and 28, and then like I said, either their pick of Randle or Clarkson.
Yeah, I mean, picks are never more valuable than before they're made. But you know, D'Angelo Russell was a number two pick, and you know, they just traded him. So what are you really getting? You're fortunate enough that late in the draft if you get a player who can even be in your rotation, and that's on any team, let alone a team that you know, wants to be a deep playoff team. So
the picks are only as valuable as the people making them. I think that's one thing that we can say. I mean, you know, Draymond Green was a second round pick. You know, right?
Absolutely.
I mean,
you know, absolutely.
Klay Thompson was a later first round pick too. If I'm not mistaken, I'm just looking at the way the champions were built. You know, so these things can be done. I don't know what Magic Johnson's acumen is, or Rob Pelinka's acumen is, as far as identifying the right talents at the right places like that. But those kinds of things, you know, have been done. And who's making the picks for Indiana? You know, what their acumen is if they were to get those picks from the Lakers. So those picks are as valuable as the people making them.
Well, true, but I mean, you can go through draft after draft after draft and go through players picked 3 to 15 that it never panned out to be anything. So,
sure.
You're moving 10 more spots down from that, and expecting those players to be building blocks, I think is a little unrealistic in this day and age. I mean, some teams find stars late. There's no disputing that. You know, but sometimes it's just a little good fortune, and maybe one team is a little smarter than everybody else in specific instances, but you know, that player has to get to you first of all, and more often, I'm just playing percentages, more often than not, you don't get a very impactful player at that point in the draft.
Let's talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers situation now. Before we talk about you know, what they may do with Paul George, what they may do with the Jimmy Butler situation, and everything else, I got to get your opinion on what happened on Tuesday, or is it Tuesday or late Monday?
Monday.
When the announcement was made that David Griffin, who had been just, you know, so very highly regarded for his moves that he has made to improve the Cavaliers roster, was so highly regarded that he was being pursued by at least two other franchises, Orlando and Milwaukee, neither of which was given permission to speak to him by Dan Gilbert, which indicated Dan Gilbert, of course, is going to keep David Griffin around long term. And suddenly, we're on different wavelengths. We have different philosophies, different ideas for the future. We are mutually agreeing to part ways. What the hell is going on?
Unbelievably perplexing to me. I think the only thing Dan Gilbert accomplished is he put an unnecessary stumbling block in front of his entire organization. Whether you think that David Griffin was one of the best GMs of the league, or whether you think he, you know, fell into a great situation who was dealt pocket aces because LeBron came back right after he got the job. They've still been to three finals in a row, and they've got a title. And you know, in 47 years of existence, they've only been to the finals one other time. So beyond all that, my biggest concern with it is LeBron. LeBron respected David Griffin and liked him and wanted to play for him and trusted him to make the right decisions. Now, some worked, some didn't. We saw this year that the, you know, the Cavs bench was aging, unathletic, and incapable of keeping up with Golden State, but he got them there. And Dan Gilbert decided that, he wasn't that important to the success of the team. It wouldn't have taken much to say, hey, here's a $5 or $6 million contract for, you know, for 4 years, and we're moving forward with Griffin at the helm here in Cleveland.
Well, let me interrupt for a second, because Rick, you're making it sound like this was solely a money decision, that Dan Gilbert decided he wasn't important enough to pay $5 or $6 million a year to. Is that your understanding of it? And I don't know if you have sources or if that's just your own observation of it, because it didn't seem like to me it was necessarily a matter of the money as much as it was the philosophy that maybe Griffin wanted to do something with this trade with this roster, for example, involving some of these potential trades that everybody is going crazy about right now, and that Gilbert maybe saw it very, very differently and said, no, we can't do that. That would be the, you know, philosophical difference that they referenced in announcing their parting of ways.
Yeah, well, if that is the case, then why bother hiring another GM? Just have Dan Gilbert be the GM if he's going to do what he wants to do anyway. I think this comes down a lot, quite simply, to Dan Gilbert's ego and thinking that position in the organization is not extremely important, and then as long as he's around, he can hire somebody and use his influence to do the job for them. I don't feel good about their situation right now. I would feel way more comfortable if David Griffin was here. I don't think the philosophical differences were so great. I mean, if you hire a GM, you're supposed to trust him to do his job.
Let me jump in here and throw some things in here, because I think this is where, and I spent all day yesterday talking about this, so I'm just going to throw it to you and get your analysis, because If the Paul George rumors, for example, which now it looks like it's more and more the whole, you know, Indiana's negotiating with L.A., but obviously earlier in the week it was Paul George announced on Sunday night he wants to get out after next year, and immediately the report was Pacers contact Cavaliers. So this thing is the discussion point now. And this is happening while, obviously, the clock is ticking on Griffin's deal, which expires at the end of the month. So all this is going on right now, and if it comes down to the Paul George thing, this is the way I saw it, and tell me if you think I'm just full of garbage, and that's okay if you do. But to me, because I don't think Dan Gilbert would blink at paying David Griffin or any other GM that he liked, you know, $4 or $5 or $6 million a year, certainly much more than the two he's making. I don't think it's that at all. But here's just my thinking. If Griffin's position is, yeah, we got to, in order to match what Golden State brings, we need to add Paul George, and it's worth sacrificing Kevin Love in that trade, even if it's only for a year. And he says that's what we should do. And he talks this over with the owner, which, you know, is not, you know, something that's, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not inappropriate for the owner to at least have a conversation. It's his money that's going to be spent here anyway. But if he says, I want to do the Paul George thing, if I'm Dan Gilbert, I have to be thinking about life after LeBron. I have to be thinking about the prospect of, if we trade Kevin Love for Paul George, who's on a one-year deal, who has publicly professed that he wants to go to the Lakers in 2017-2018, and we don't win the championship with Paul George, which would be about the only thing that could change his mind to make him stay and defend the championship that he would have just won with LeBron and Kyrie. If he don't, we don't win the championship, Paul George is going to do what he said he's going to do and go sign with the Lakers. And now I got LeBron James, who's lost Paul George, who'd lost his third wheel in Kevin Love in the deal for Paul George, and now it's just him and Kyrie, and LeBron is a free agent. There is a very, very strong possibility that LeBron James is going to sign somewhere else and go somewhere else to pursue the super team that can match or beat the Warriors. And now I'm left with what I was left with the last time LeBron left. Kyrie and nothing. Kyrie and a whole bunch of warm bodies. If I'm Dan Gilbert, I might be saying to David Griffin, David, we can't trade Kevin Love for a one-year guy, then watch the one-year guy leave and watch LeBron leave, and our franchise's future is gone. If that happened, I think that is a philosophical difference that would say, if you are insistent upon taking this course, then we should probably not work together.
Okay, two quick responses.
Sure.
And what you said had a lot of validity, but two quick points. Number one, David Griffin is the general manager. I don't think there's any question that he knows more about NBA basketball than Dan Gilbert. So I think as an owner, if you've hired a GM, if you've been to three straight finals, if you've won the only championship in your franchise's existence, you should trust him to do his job. Two, if he is mortgaging the future for the present and things go haywire and LeBron leaves, they're going to stink anyway, Bob, when and if LeBron goes, because the mass exodus is going to occur soon after that. Kyrie's going to want out of here, and the pieces are just going to fall apart, and we're going to be back to watching guys like Sergei Karasev and Deion Waiters and Anthony Bennett play basketball. So I side strongly with Griff on this one.
You know, to say that if and when LeBron leaves, the team is going to stink anyway, you might certainly be an accurate statement. But I think there is a different level of stink, if you will. And to me, if in the Eastern Conference that is now minus LeBron James, and there is still no other super team in the Eastern Conference, if you start with a core of Kyrie, who is one of the top three or four point guards in the game, and Kevin Love, who would still be here in the scenario if you turn the George thing down, who is still one of the top three or four power forwards in the game, both of them multi-time All-Stars, you are automatically still a factor in the Eastern Conference. And then once LeBron leaves, that money is cleared up to go and add. And there have been, according to reports, NBA players who have said they would like to come and play with Kyrie Irving. If Kyrie Irving is the new focal point, if you will, it wouldn't be the Kyrie Irving focal point that we had when he was first drafted out of Duke, because there was nothing but trash around him. You would at least have another all-star 20-plus point scorer along with him, and then, of course, the ability to add people. But if it's just Kyrie and Love is gone, Kyrie is gone in 1 year later. There's no doubt about it, he would walk. But if he still had at least some opportunity to compete in the Eastern Conference with Love and then somebody to add at the three spot after LeBron were to leave, I think it's a better level of stink than, hey, we are now minus all of our big three, we are minus all of our cachet that we used to have, and we are a lottery team every single year.
Well, have you watched them play without LeBron, even the last 3 years?
Sure.
They've been pretty awful.
Yeah, but you know what? But Rick, let's remember, what are they? They're LeBron's team. The game plan is centered around LeBron. The offensive system revolves around LeBron. They are coached in the way that it is with LeBron on the floor. If LeBron is not a part of your roster, your entire offensive game plan changes, your entire mentality changes. Tyronn Lue, and I don't know how good of a coach he really is. You know, he's had the benefit of coming in after David Blatt and being the coach of the big three and the group that that Griffin has assembled for him. It's in really LeBron has assembled for him in large part. But the point is, it would be an entirely different system, and I don't know how an offense that is not centered around LeBron would be, if these guys actually had a new system that they would be playing in.
I think you have a team like Charlotte or Indiana or Milwaukee. gets in the playoffs and loses in the first round.
I
don't see having a contender in any way, shape, or form without LeBron on this team.
So what's the alternative? Would you rather have two All-Stars and play into the first and second round for a little while until you get the next big thing that you can sign? Or, like I said, here comes Dan Gilbert's son up at the podium saying what's not to like three, four straight years in a row.
Right. Well, my alternative would be to let your GM do his job and do what he thinks is best and try to win a championship next year and keep LeBron around.
And if you don't win a championship next year, then what?
Then you at least have to prove to him that you're his best chance to win one. And if you're making moves to try to do that, you hope that pans out. If he goes, I don't know that you can go all in with one guy and have a fallback plan at the same time.
That's very true. That's a conundrum. Because I don't think you can convince him that this is still his best chance to win if Paul George leaves and goes to the Lakers, which is what he has already promised he's going to do.
Right, but a lot can happen I'm sure they were exploring that as they were talking about anything that, Paul George could make more money here once they traded him than he would signing with the Lakers, and he would have had a taste of potentially and likely playing in the finals. I still think the Cavs, as long as LeBron in some form of a legitimate big three, whether Love or George is the third one, it is still, they're still the best team in the East. I still expect them to be in the finals next year. Excuse me. Unless the wheels, completely come off.
Right, right.
But, ideally, Bob, I...
Billups, Rick, in the interest of time here, because we're running short on it, let me ask you about the Billups thing. I guess he met with Dan Gilbert again today. Is this, to your understanding, to be the GM to replace Griffin or to be the president of basketball ops who would then hire a GM? And what do you think of that potential marriage?
I think it's probably the latter, in that he'll have final say on evaluation and trades, but he's going to need a guy with tons and tons of front office and salary cap experience that can dot all his I's and cross all his T's and work out all the minuscule details that are involved in some of these trades. So that second person, whoever that is going to have to be really well versed because, I always liked Chauncey as a player, and he seems like an extremely intelligent guy. But if you can just walk in from an ESPN broadcast booth with no previous front office experience and be a GM, then the job is extremely overrated. No training required, basically. Just have at it and take some shots, and you're great at it. But
interesting about saying that? Isn't that exactly what the Lakers have done with Magic? I mean, Magic was a great player, but in the last, 10 years, he's been involved with baseball as the part owner of the L.A. Dodgers. He has not been in basketball. He's kind of walking off the street in terms of a front office position and walking into the president of basketball ops in Los Angeles.
Yeah, he at least had some tiny bit of in the coaching chair. He at least has a guy. He has a second in command with him in Rob Pelinka, who's doing a lot of stuff for him. It can be done. Maybe the old saying it's not rocket science is way more true than we all know. But that salary cap, there are so many loopholes and things that even people that look at it all day, every day have to have a hard time staying up on. So, Chauncey's he'll have final say. But I don't think he's going to be, he's not going to be doing the nuts and bolts,
right,
blue collar work of it. He'll be giving his opinions and authoritativeness and approval two things, and he'll approach teams, and then he'll have another guy working with him to make it happen.
Oh yeah, no, I totally agree. And he would need, no matter who it is, I think you know they need that kind of second in command, as you put it, that Palinka's out there, and that's something surely that I'm sure Chauncey Billups would tell Dan Gilbert that he wants and needs to have. Last thing, Rick Nolan on the Cavs before all of this kind of comes to a head. Well, it doesn't all come to a head at draft day tomorrow, but I think a lot of these moves are going to be made before tomorrow and the draft. Two different stories. One of them from CBS Sports and the Chicago Sun-Times. No, hold on. I'm sorry. I got them backwards. Doggone it, what happened to the first one? Well, anyway, the first one was Jimmy Butler is reportedly telling the Bulls that he would like to explore a trade to the Cavaliers. That's story number one. I just can't seem to find it now. For whatever reason, it disappeared on me. But story number two is from the Chicago Sun-Times. They are reporting that some Cavaliers players have told Jimmy Butler, don't do it. You don't want to be a part of this, quote, volatile, end quote, situation in Cleveland. Can you believe that somebody on the Cavaliers roster right now would be telling Jimmy Butler, stay away?
No. And the way I pieced it together through 3 zillion tweets was that there were reports that he initially told the Bulls that he wanted to be traded to Cleveland,
right?
Followed by reports that he told the Bulls he didn't want to be traded to Cleveland. And then the news about these alleged contacts with Cavs players came out. I would certainly hope that's not the case. I have no reason to believe that it did happen. My dad would call it biting your nose to spite your face if you're a Cavs player. Tell him that. I mean, why would you tell a guy who could potentially help you win a championship not to come to your team? I would be telling him the exact opposite. Come here. It's the nuttiness of this time of year, and I it's only going to get worse the rest of today and most of tomorrow. And then when July 1st
hit, too, yeah.
Yeah, last year I thought was the most unbelievable offseason I'd ever seen with the contract numbers, and this year doesn't promise to be a whole lot different.
No question about it. Already a bunch of moves. Dwight Howard is not a Hawk anymore. He's in Charlotte, and I talked about the Lakers trade. Chris Paul is reportedly now going to Houston or San Antonio. I mean, the rumors just keep swirling. Jimmy Butler's going. Maybe he's going to Boston in a deal for the number 3 pick. It's just a crazy, like I said, it's almost fantasy draft time, but in real life. Rick Nolan, thank you, my friend. And I'll tell you what, I think you coughed twice the entire time. You wanted to be ready.
Yeah. I was close to losing it there at one point, but tried to hold it together. So,
well, you did a great job of it, as always. And really, thank you for the insight and the analysis. We'll catch up again real soon.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Rick. Rick Nolan joining us. We're late for our Top of the Hour Sports Center, but that's okay. We'll catch up now. By the way, congrats to Jacob Brittich of Holland. Going to go see the Robert Easter Jr. IBF Lightweight Championship fight on June 30th at the Huntington Center. We'll give away more tickets next hour right here on The Ticket.
He hung one. Edwin rockets it to deep left field and gone into the second deck. Oh, get that man an extra order of crab cakes. A two-out, two-run homer for Encarnacion, his 17th, and his month of June continues. 3-2 pitch, wind up the alley in right center field. That's the hit the Indians have been looking for. Lindor delivers. It's a two-out, two-run double and a three-run fourth. As the Indians now lead it 5-2.
That ball is crushed. Back it goes. It is gone for Machado. And we are tied at 5. Line drive down the right field line. Base hit for Adam Jones. It's into the corner. Machado scores. Adam hustling at second base. He has an RBI double. And the Orioles have the lead at 6-5.
You're on home, it really hurts. And Machado kind of took some good swings all night. We got a chance to win in the ninth, so we went down fighting and made some mistakes, but we'll show up tomorrow and see if we can do a little better.
And the pitch to Seager. Swing on it, driven to right field. And that will get down. One hop off the fence. Here comes Smith around third. He scores and the Mariners win it. They win it 5-4. Kyle Seager for the game winner here in Seattle.
positives are Zim pitched well, and the offense did a nice job of coming back from a two-run deficit late in the game, but obviously it wasn't enough.
LeBron didn't come back to Cleveland because of who they had at the owner, the coach, or the GM, and he's not going to leave Cleveland because of who they have at the owner, the coach, or the GM. It's all about the connections of his fans in Northeast Ohio, but winning. And winning's the most important thing here. So if whoever comes in gets them back to a finals level, perhaps gets them back to a championship level, that's the biggest thing that will keep LeBron James in the wine and gold. Anything less, and certainly any sort of regression, or a regression that seems connected to the bad timing of this GM move, that would be the thing that would signal perhaps he starts looking elsewhere.
Jimmy's always respected LeBron. He loves Kyrie, having played with him on the Olympic team. But I just talked to a couple team sources within the Bulls organization, and they said, it's still really unlikely because the Cavs don't really have a lot of assets. The Bulls want picks, high picks, and several young assets, controllable assets in return. The Cavs would have to get a third team involved.
It's not a value trade. They bring back Marco Bellinelli, who's a role-playing bench player, and Miles Plumlee, who has what a lot of people think is a bad contract. Saves some salary, but doesn't save a lot. It lowers their cap figure by about $5 million. But to me, this is the Hawks sending a signal that they are going into a full rebuild mode. The Lakers have to avoid the temptation here. The correct thing to do is not to make a trade with valuable assets to get Paul George. You think you've already got him. Don't make the mistake of having this momentum and feeling like you've got to trade one of the pieces that you don't want to give away to get him now. Show some patience. Even if Paul George comes to the Lakers this week, they're not getting past the Warriors in the West this year.
I do know that a few teams with picks ahead of the Knicks in this draft have reached out, and I assume that the first round pick in 2017 from those teams has been put on the table in any conversations for Porzingis. And I think obviously if you're thinking about trading Porzingis, you have to get back multiple first round picks for a player who's early on in his career in a controllable contract.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, hour number two of the Extravaganza now underway right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. You want to get in, we would like for you to get in. I love that you listen because I got lots to say. But by all means, I would love to hear from you. Do you, and Jimmy Cushlin, here's the question that I want you to answer, and I also want our listeners to answer. Bottom line is, do you have faith? Or let me rephrase. If you had to put your faith on a scale of 1 to 10, that LeBron James is going to re-sign with the Cavaliers after this coming basketball season, what number do you put that at and why? On a scale of 1 being he's gone no matter what, 10, or excuse me, should I reverse that? I'm trying to think of the best way to do that. Number 1 is that he stays no matter what.
Okay.
Even if they lose to the Warriors again. And number 10 being he's gone. What is the likelihood that you believe LeBron James is leaving after next season?
7.
Okay, explain why.
7 because it will have been 4 years, which twistedly is the same amount of time he was in Miami before he came back. The main mission would have been accomplished, no matter how many asterisks that Golden State fans might want to say, because Green wasn't there in Game 5, yada, yada. They still won the title in 2016.
Don't even bring that up anymore. Don't dignify that trash
right
anymore. Few things bother me as much as that bothers me. That ridiculous, now, I don't want to get off into the weeds here because I want you to continue with your answer, but that ridiculous notion that Draymond Green's suspension in Game 5 is what cost them, again, for the billionth time, he played Game 6. He played Game 7. And as you pointed out last time, he played Game 7, which, again, was at home.
Mm-hmm.
He went off.
Yeah, he did.
And the Cavaliers still beat them. Don't give me this, if you'd have been there in Game 5, well, then they would have won. What about 6 and 7?
Yeah.
I just can't stand. That is one of the biggest little stupid, crying, whiny, we don't know how to accept our loss. I mean, the Warriors... were worse at accepting their loss than the Democratic Party is that Hillary lost. That's the bottom line. I mean, the Democrats have been better accepting of the fact that they lost an election they felt they should have won easily than the Warriors were losing in the 2016 finals. You try to put your little Golden State asterisk on that because of Draymond Green. And oh, by the way, even if, let's just say for the sake of discussion that there was anything to be said there, and there isn't. Who got him suspended? He did. And not just by that act, not just by that ridiculous act of trying to smack LeBron James in the package when he stepped over him, but that was just one of many, 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 many flagrant fouls and technical fouls that he had received that added up to his suspension. So it wasn't the Cavaliers' right. fault. It wasn't the officials' fault. It wasn't the NBA's fault that Draymond Green has no self-control or has the self-control of a two-year-old who didn't get as many popsicles as he wanted from his mother. I'm going to throw a tantrum. I mean, that's what he is. He's a baby. I've got no use for Draymond Green at all. And if you're a Sparty grad, sorry about it. I'm going to continue to say it. He's a punk. I got no use for him. He's overrated. He is not an all-star. I know he is an all-star. He's been voted the all-star team. But if he was playing anywhere else other than Golden State in the circumstances that they have there for him, he would be just another dude.
Yeah.
And I've got no use for him. Don't give me that crap trying to taint the Cavaliers championship with, well, if Draymond wouldn't have been suspended and the league hadn't tried to extend the series by giving him this bogus suspension. That is the biggest pile of trash ever.
I didn't mean to make you go off in the weeds. I just brought
it up.
Keep
doing it every time somebody brings that up.
Right. I only did it in the snarky way because I don't know about you, but I still see that coming up from Warriors fans every now and again, and that irks me too. Yeah. Point is, to answer your original question, I'm at a 7 for LeBron leaving because he'll have been here for 4 years, probably 4 straight finals. The 2016 title, which means main mission accomplished, bring Cleveland that one title. He will have done what he had to do, and he's got these other plans to play with other guys and do other things. So the reason it's not the full 10 is if the Cavs, regardless of what happens this offseason, somehow beat the Warriors in the 2018 finals, then maybe he comes back to defend it.
That's the only way I can see it.
That's too. Why it's not a full 10, but I'm going 7. I it's very, very probable.
And that's why, Jim, I'm going 9.
Okay.
You know, because I don't see, well, it's not it depends on what now Dan Gilbert and Chauncey Billups probably do with this roster.
Yeah.
It is possible that they could beat Golden State because, again, they were in a couple of the games. They were blown out in the first two, but they were in the other two that they lost. They were certainly, they had game 3 won, in fact, and then they won game 4. They were in game 5. I don't see them beating Golden State either. I'll just have to say that for now, and we'll see what they do with this roster. But if LeBron James loses in the finals again, and he does it for the third time in 4 years against Golden State, and he does it with the same team for the third time in 4 years, there is zero doubt in my mind he is going to look for another team. He's not going to come back to see if we can do it 4 out of 5. He's going to go somewhere else. And he's going to listen to every offer, to Greg Popovich, and think about this. And this is one of the biggest stories, I think, going right now in the NBA and all of this craziness that we've been discussing. One of the biggest stories is that in the summer of 2018, Jerry West, who has now signed on with the Clippers as an advisor, perhaps the most successful and the most respected NBA executive in not only in the league today, but potentially ever, and a huge fan of LeBron James, and a man who enjoys huge respect from LeBron James, will be running the Clippers. Well, he's an advisor, but that means they're not going to do anything that he doesn't sign off on. He won't be doing the day-to-day grunt work. He won't be scouting, but he's going to run the show. If Chris Paul is still there, if Blake Griffin is still there, if DeAndre Jordan is still there, and I know there are rumors today, that's another one we didn't get to with Nolan, Jim.
Yeah, that's a good
point. But DeAndre Jordan is apparently up on the block as well. But if their core is still there and Jerry West is there, does LeBron James think that him joining CP3, his best friend, Blake Griffin, a 4 who just, you know, can't be that guy, but he can be one hell of a piece. DeAndre Jordan, an all-star center. Added to CP3, the playmaker that Kyrie Irving is not. Does LeBron James think he could win a championship? And by the way, the Clippers hate Golden State. Hate them. Hate them. There's a death rivalry between those two. And LeBron, of course, having lost now 3 out of 4 times, if this happens next year, to Golden State, will have pretty much an equal enmity and hatred for Golden State, would join that group. Can you imagine that titanic battle in the Western Conference Finals? I could see LeBron wanting to be a part of that. The flip side would be, and this is again what the national discussion is today, Magic Johnson, the player to whom LeBron James is most often and most accurately compared, because LeBron is not the right comparison for Michael Jordan. He is the right comparison for Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson running the Lake Show. If he can look at LeBron and say, hey, yo, LBJ, why don't you come out here and visit for a little while? Yeah, you see this kid Lonzo Ball? He's Jason Kidd going into his second year. We got PG-13 signing. You know he's coming. How'd you like to play on the other wing opposite him? And oh, by the way, Brandon Ingram will be going into his third year as one of the best young players in the game.
And oh, by the way, they now have a big man who's actually somewhat valuable at Brook Lopez.
Brook Lopez. And who would take apart Zaza Pachulia or whatever other inside player that the Warriors might have at that particular point in time, right? And he might be saying, this is the antidote to Golden State. This is where you come. And not to mention, it's the glory of the Lakers, where I won championships, where Kobe won championships, where Kareem and Worthy won championships. This is where you want to be. It could be an L.A. versus L.A. battle. Jerry West, the respected executive, Magic Johnson, the magnetic personality, two potentially stocked rosters that would both be put over the top if only LeBron James joined it. All of that is going to be playing in 2018 for LeBron James. And people honestly think he's going to re-sign and play with Dan Gilbert for Dan Gilbert? And Kyrie for another year and rolling in the dice on which Tristan is going to show up and all of this stuff again? I have 100% belief, 10 out of 10, that if the Cavaliers get back to the finals and lose to the Warriors again, that LeBron is gone. I will only make it a 9 out of 10 because of the prospect of them actually beating the Warriors this time around and then him wanting to defend his title
right.
yet again. And he would probably only sign a one-year deal to do that
yeah.
so he could then explore the move to his buddies in one of those other situations the following year.
I tell you one thing that I've been thinking of today, too, with a lot of these other rumors and things that are out there and the couple moves that did get made, putting it all, you know, all together. First of all, one of the stories is that because of the front office chaos at this exact moment with the Cavs, those trades are kind of put on hold. That's why we started reading rumor stuff yesterday about the Lakers getting maybe back involved in seeing if they want PG-13 this year. Now, I agree with Brian Windhorst, the clip we played in the montage, that
they, wrong way to do it.
Right. I agree with that. But that's going to delay any possibility of any of those moves, you know, being made, right? And say, for sake of argument, that no big trade happens, that Kevin Love is still a Cav, right? And then the scenario plays out, they lose, and LeBron goes. Next summer, the Cavs are the key to everybody else's free agency and trades. Because if I'm the Cavs at that point, and LeBron bolts on me, but I still have Love and Kyrie with their various contracts, I'm immediately on the phone seeing what I can get for both of them. Both of them. I would go, if LeBron leaves and they don't make a big trade, again, so you have Love and Kyrie, then I'm on the phones at that point, whether it's Billups or whoever, seeing what I can get for both Kyrie and Love. You'll get big-time draft picks. You'll get other assets in that, and they kind of would then control next offseason because people would want either of those players.
Interesting. Because Kevin Love, though, would be going into the Paul George season.
Right.
His last season, which means he would not be able to give get you as much as perhaps he would in a normal circumstance with he had two or more years.
Kyrie would have at least two left.
Kyrie would have two left, yes. He would certainly bring you much, much more. But if you're talking just prospects, though, or, you know, draft picks, you're in the same situation that Rick Nolan just talked about. You've got to hit the home run, and how often do you? D'Angelo Russell was a number two pick. He was just traded, number two overall.
Right.
He was just traded. I mean, how many, if you look in the last, let's just say real recent, let's say the last five drafts, and look at the top 10. How many of the top 10 players in the last five drafts, that's 50 guys, are impact star players, where they're starters and they're big-time contributors to winning teams? In the last five drafts. I'm not. It's not a legit question. Where, I mean, it's rhetorical. Because if we actually did pull all 50 of those names, we would see so many of them that were just busts or just not panning out because they came out at age 19. They're
right.
One and dones, and they're, you know, they're nowhere near what they could be or should be at, et cetera, et cetera. But the point is, it's really hard.
That is.
And Rick Nolan brought that up. It's really hard to project 19-year-olds who are generally speaking the big star players about how they're going to be by the time they're 22 or 23 in their third or fourth years in the National Basketball Association.
Now you're making now you're making me go through some of these. For 2016's, maybe Brandon Ingram. We have still technically have no idea on Ben Simmons. He never played a
You're making me look these up, aren't you?
You're making me look these up. I'm doing
it
right now.
Well, it was only rhetorical.
Let's see, 2015.
It was only rhetorical, but I mean, we could only. I'll tell you what, Jim, here, do this.
Okay.
Do this. It's 4:28 anyway.
All right.
Let's take our time out here, bottom of the hour, give away some more fight tickets, and then we'll take this break during the bottom of the hour, and let's look up the 50 guys in the last five drafts. Top 50 guys, top 10 in each of the last five drafts, and we'll see which one of them are players, and which one. Because these assets that we're talking about are only assets if you hit the home run. You know, if you guess on the right guy as opposed to the Darko, for example, I know that was more than 5 years ago, but you understand the point. And it's so hard to do when you're talking about these young 19-year-old kids. By the way, that's another story we perhaps could talk about after the break. Did you hear what Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski at Duke wants to do now? Mike Krzyzewski is floating a proposal, and he's really, you know, if anybody's got the kind of cachet to reach the decision makers at both the NBA and the NCAA level, it would be Mike Krzyzewski. But Mike Krzyzewski says, number one, he wants high school players to be allowed to enter the draft again. And number two, if you choose not to enter the draft out of high school, you have to make a two-year commitment to the college. You can't be one and done. It's either high school or it's 2 years, grades in good standing, playing 2 years for the team that gives you the scholarship.
It's the baseball rule. Love it.
I do, too. I do, too. And he's also lobbying for a college hoops commissioner, which is very interesting, considering the first time I'd heard of that was when our man from SB Nation, who was it that we had on, who's lobbying to become the college football commissioner just a couple of weeks ago. We had a guest on. Anyway, so that's a part of the conversation, too. That way, and he's right, he's smart to do that, by the way, because I think the majority of the guys will go to college for 2 years, come out as a 20-year-old guy with a little bit of seasoning that they can really project. And the guys that are, you know, going to come out of high school, they're only going to be able to be the prodigies, the LeBron, the Kobe, the Dwight Howard, the guys who actually don't miss. All right, here's what I got. I mentioned more fight tickets. Let's do it again. Get another pair right now for Robert Easter Jr. and Dennis Shafikov, World IBF Lightweight Championship fight. It's coming up on June 30, and it's at the Huntington Center, and you will be there if you're caller number 8 right now, 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. Good luck.
6-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
All right, 4:37 now. We continue on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader. We're just talking more about the NBA rumors, trade rumors, the draft tomorrow, who guys are targeting, et cetera. And, Jim, you know, we talk about assets. And we talked about, you said, well, we would trade, you know, if the circumstances played out where the Cavaliers lost to the Warriors in the finals again next year.
Right.
LeBron James walks. Now you're left with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. You'd say you'd actively try to trade them both rather than try to build around them. And, you know, you trade for assets and draft picks. And that got me wondering, well, how valuable are these draft picks anyway? Considering the fact that, I mean, just take the Cavaliers. Last two overall number one picks.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is an NBA All-Star. Some might say he's a superstar, Kyrie Irving. The other one was Anthony Bennett, who is not only not with the Cavaliers anymore, he's not with any of the 29 other NBA teams anymore.
Right.
He's not with any of the Canadian League teams anymore. He's not with any of the overseas teams anymore. Dude is out of basketball. And he was the number one pick in what year, 2013?
What, Wiggins?
Yeah. No, I'm talking about Anthony Bennett.
Oh, Anthony Bennett. That was 15. Yeah, Anthony Bennett would
15. Oh, yeah, I forgot about Wiggins. Beg your pardon. So two of the last three.
Check that. Wiggins would have been 14, technically picked by the Cavs. We know that.
Yeah.
13 was Bennett.
So I was right.
Yes, you were. My bad.
Okay. So two of the last three. So you got Wiggins, who was a star, certainly on the rise in Minnesota because of the trade for Love.
Mm-hmm.
And you got Kyrie, who's a superstar.
Right.
And you got Anthony Bennett. And that's the number one pick, let alone, Team X has agreed to trade their number 9 overall pick to the Cavaliers as part of a package for Kyrie Irving, for Kyrie Irving in a trade scenario. What? How do we know what value the number 9 pick is when most teams can't even get the number 1 pick right?
Right.
So I did what we talked about, and I have actually not just the last 5 years. I went back a sixth year because I wanted to go to the 2011 draft in which you have Kyrie Irving.
I incidentally, I did the same thing you did during the break. I went back to 07.
Well, I'm not going there. We can't because it's going to take too long.
No, it won't. About 90 actually, guys. It won't.
I just wanted to look at the last 50 guys taken in the
sure,
top 10.
Sure, yeah, I know.
But I went to six.
Okay.
So in 2011, just to give you here are the top 10. Kyrie Irving, Derek Williams, Enes Kanter, Tristan Thompson, Jonas Valanciunas, Jan Vesely, Bismack Biyombo, Brandon Knight, Kemba Walker, Jimmer Fredette. Those are your top 10 draft picks. You would think that those are pretty damned highly important assets if you're going to trade
right.
for a superstar.
Right.
How many of those guys would be worth their weight in spit in such a trade right now? Kyrie Irving, the number one, superstar.
Yep.
Derek Williams, the number two, could not get off of the Cavaliers' bench in the finals.
When I really thought they should have gone to him, he had that athleticism I think we're supposed to be talking about right now.
But the fact that he was even with the Cavaliers at all
right, yep.
says all you need to know
exactly.
about how his career has gone.
Yep.
Right?
Right.
Kanter, he's a piece. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a star, he's a piece. Tristan Thompson is a piece of a puzzle.
Yep.
Valanciunas, pretty much the same. Vesely, I don't know, is even in the league.
No, he's not in the league anymore.
Bismack Biyombo just got a contract after playing well in the playoffs against the Cavs last year.
Two games. He's got him a big contract. He's a piece.
Yeah, he's a piece. Brandon Knight, we know who Brandon is or what he is. Again, just a piece. He's not a franchise-type player
yep.
in any way, shape, or form. Kemba Walker is a little better. Jimmer Fredette is a flat-out superstar. In China. I don't know if you knew that. He is like the
I had heard about that. Yep.
Yeah.
So
again, and then of course number 11, there's Klay Thompson.
Right. For me, out of that list of 10, since we're not going past 11.
Oh, and number 15. I'm sorry, I gotta say this.
Yeah, you do.
Number 15 is Kawhi Leonard, who happens to be now think about this, Jim. This is why I
Fine, let's go farther. Jimmy Butler, number 30.
Yeah, you could do that too. But this is why I can't see these picks as being such valuable quote-unquote assets or commodities because,
yep.
you know, what GM took Valanciunas instead of Butler? What GM took Biyombo over
right.
Leonard? Who took Brandon Knight over Klay Thompson? You understand what I'm saying?
Of course.
Who took one pick ahead?
Yep.
Jimmer Fredette, the great outside shooter
yep.
from BYU.
Now,
over Klay Thompson, who's one of the best pure shooters this game has
for
seen.
For me, when I went through these top 10 in these bunch of drafts, and I did 2011, like I said, and during the break, I went back to 07. That's why I didn't think it would take, you know, super long. For me, the only ones that would even qualify as true impact players are Kyrie at 1 and Kemba Walker at 9.
Of the top 10.
Of the top 10.
Yes.
We're only doing the top 10. This is also, incidentally, 2011. This is the draft. Mr. Irrelevant, number 60. Isaiah Thomas, who's about to get a max deal from those Celtics.
Wow, that's another great point. Thank you. So there are star-type players here, but you don't know who they are.
That's the
and
nature of the NBA
GMs
draft.
Don't know who they are.
And that's been the nature of the NBA draft, especially when you compare it to the NFL draft. It
because
really
you're
is
getting guys coming out of college so young, 1 year in most cases, or you know, of the real superstars.
Yep.
And the college game is just a different animal
yep.
than the NBA game, even more so than football is.
Yep.
Because, I mean, there's no doubt that there were star-caliber franchise-changing talents.
Yep.
Kawhi Leonard is a franchise-changing talent. And by the way, we only know that now after five seasons.
Yep.
Because he
True.
Was a six-point scorer his first year.
That's
Maybe
right.
like a 9 or 10-point scorer second year and on down the line. He's evolved into what he is. But looking 5 years down the road, franchise-changers, Kyrie Irving, Kawhi Leonard, kind of Jimmy Butler, and Isaiah Thomas. And that's it. Klay Thompson is not a franchise changer. He is a tremendous star type player,
yes,
but only as the number two shooter on a great team in the perfect scenario that he's in right now.
Right.
He's not a guy who would go to a team and they'd build around him and he would be your 30-point guy.
Precisely.
Just not going to be that. All right, so that's 2011. Look to 2012, just again at the value of drafts, or draft picks, I should say. Top 10, Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Bradley Beal, Deion Waiters, Thomas Robinson, Damian Lillard, Harrison Barnes, Terrence Ross, Andre Drummond, Austin Rivers. Those are your top 10.
Mm-hmm.
How many of them are franchise changers where if you got, hey, we got the number, you know, two overall pick in this draft from so-and-so,
mm-hmm,
and you're the Charlotte Bobcats, and we picked Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Did we find a franchise player at the number two pick in the draft?
Swing and a miss.
You damn well better. If you're a number two in the draft, it better be a franchise changer. And it's not.
Right.
Anthony Davis is.
Yep.
And was. Bradley Beal is a star in the making.
Yeah.
You know, number two type player.
I have
who
him
went
on
number three overall. Probably a little high considering that.
Yeah.
He's not somebody you would build a franchise around, but he's a really good player. Deion Waiters, peace. Thomas Robinson, really weak, weak piece. Damian Lillard is an all-star,
yep,
a guy that they have built around in Portland. Not with any success for a championship, but if they were in the East, perhaps with a lot more.
Yep.
Harrison Barnes, just a piece, just a player. Number seven overall, should be a damn veritable all-star on a regular basis. Is not. Terrence Ross to the Raptors, not. Andre Drummond has been an all-star and a leading rebounder. Really solid piece, but again, not somebody you build around. He's a piece. Austin Rivers has been very, very overrated,
yeah,
and very underperforming in his time so far. This is the draft, by the way, that Jared Sullinger went overall out of Ohio State, number 21. And are there any other star? Oh, this is Draymond's draft.
Yes, it is.
Number 35 overall in the second round, Draymond Green, probably about right. There are no other franchise changers in the 2012 NBA draft. Anthony Davis. And that's pretty, and maybe Damian Lillard, since they built around him. Draymond Green's not a change, a franchise changer. To me, he's a piece. He just happens to be a piece in the right place right now.
And the way I'm analyzing it, for the record, mine, the only names out of those top 10 I put were Davis, borderline for Beal, Lillard, and yes, Drummond, because whether we like it or whether Pistons fans like it or not, he's still the main piece in theory for the Pistons until further notice.
But to me, again, if you're drafting in the top 10, certainly at least in the top 7 or 8, I mean, if you're in the lottery, I guess, we'll just say 10.
Yeah.
You should be more than just that team's main piece. You should be somebody that can be built around.
Right.
And I don't think you can build around a championship team around Andre Drummond. Would I like to have him? Hell yeah. Would I take her in the top 10 and say I can build my franchise around that guy? Hell no.
Right.
2013, we already talked about this a little bit. Anthony Bennett, Victor Oladipo, Otto Porter, Cody Zeller, Alex Zen, Len, Nerlens Noel, Ben McLemore, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Trey Burke, C.J. McCollum. Those are your top 10.
And to me, the best player out of all of them is number 10. Sorry, Pistons fans, C.J. McCollum.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. As we know, Anthony Bennett is, as we talked about, not even a part of basketball anymore.
Greatest
anywhere.
Number one bust of all time.
I don't even know if he's allowed to shoot baskets in his own driveway anymore. It's just not. Victor Oladipo, underperformer. Otto Porter, underperformer. Cody Zeller, a non-factor. All these guys. Nerlens Noel, who was just traded, has a chance to be a really, really solid NBA inside guy.
He does.
But no more solid, probably, than the aforementioned Andre Drummond.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a nice piece to have, but not a number six overall pick. KCP is a nice piece. Trey Burke, CJ McCollum, probably the best, as you pointed out. The 15th best player in that draft, according to those who made the draft picks, is the freak. It's Giannis Antetokounmpo. This guy was passed over 14 times by the aforementioned names, including Kelly Olynyk. Kelly Olynyk was taken ahead of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Steven Adams was taken over Giannis Antetokounmpo. How valuable are these quote-unquote picks or these assets, these commodities, these picks, when, again, the best basketball minds in the world, the GMs and player personnel directors and the scouts for the Cavaliers, Magic, Wizards, Bobcats, Suns, Pelicans, Kings, Pistons, Timberwolves, Blazers, Sixers, Thunder, Mavericks, and Jazz. none of them saw in Giannis Antetokounmpo what we now see from Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Right.
So these things just don't have much value. And if I look down into the rest of that draft, there's nobody. Am I missing anybody that you saw?
The only other name that possibly jumps out at me is Nikolai Jokic, who the Nuggets are trying to do some things with in Denver right now. He's the one big man they've kept at the last couple years.
Okay, and obviously not, you know, a star type player.
Right, that's a second round, 41st overall.
The 2014 draft, top 10. Andrew Wiggins, Jabari Parker, Joel Embiid, Aaron Gordon, Dante Exum, Marcus Smart, Julius Randle, Nick Stauskas, Noah Vonleh, and Elfried Payton. Andrew Wiggins going to be a star. You can build a franchise around him, and I think they're doing that in Minnesota. He, of course, was traded to the Timberwolves for Kevin Love. Mm-hmm. As LeBron James and others felt like he's going to be great, yes, but we don't need somebody who's going to be great. We need somebody who can help us win a title right now. Kevin Love fit the bill. It was the right decision.
Yep.
Andrew Wiggins was also the right decision for Minnesota, who wasn't going to win anything with Kevin Love as their centerpiece. So that's a great pick. Jabari Parker, injuries have derailed him.
Yep.
It's really too early to tell, but it's a hell of a piece with the Freak. Antetokounmpo when he comes back fully healthy. Joel Embiid was on his way to a very, very spectacular year before he was shut down with injuries after, 35 games?
Yeah.
So he's had nothing but injuries, but in the time that he's played, he's certainly going to be a star. Yes, the 76ers can and will build around Joel Embiid. So you got two out of three there, in my opinion. Then you got Aaron Gordon and the rest of the names that I just mentioned there. I don't think there's a build-around superstar-type player.
Nope.
In the bunch. Marcus Smart is a nice piece. Julius Randle is going to be a nice piece in L.A., but he will be a secondary or third-tier piece behind Alonzo Ball, a Paul George, you know, of course, if LeBron goes there, et cetera. He's just another guy. Anybody in that top 10 jump out of you?
That top 10?
Other than the ones I mentioned?
No. No, it's really just those top three, and two of them have their injury question marks next to them.
Very good. 2015, so we only have two left. That's why I didn't want to go all the way back to 2007, Jimmy, because we're already running out of time.
Fair enough.
2015, Karl-Anthony Towns, flat-out stud, was number one overall. D'Angelo Russell, we just saw, got traded. Julia Okafor is simply not going to be a factor in this league. Kristaps Porzingis, big news surrounding him. Mario Hezonja, who I don't even remember. Willie Cauley-Stein from Kentucky. Emmanuel Mudiay went seventh. Stanley Johnson went eighth. Of course, we know him with the Pistons. Frank Kaminsky went ninth. Justice Winslow from Duke went number 10 overall to the Miami Heat. Karl-Anthony Towns is a franchise changer, no doubt.
Yep.
Big, big, big selection there by Minnesota. So when I say they're going to build around Wiggins, it's really building around those two guys.
Yes.
Yep. D'Angelo Russell didn't work. He is a good point guard, will never be a star point guard. Just got traded to the Brooklyn Nets. Julio Okafor, already gone from Philadelphia. They want to get rid of him. There's no place for him. As I heard it best described by a scout yesterday, he had talent coming out of Duke, no doubt. But his game does not translate into today's game.
Yeah.
And that is, he's a 6'11 guy who plays under the basket. He doesn't play over it, and he doesn't play outside of it. He doesn't have the outside face-up game that a Kristaps Porzingis does, you know, that Kevin Durant and other, you know, big-time big players have to have in the modern NBA. It just doesn't work, and he doesn't necessarily have the best work habits, they say. So it's not good. He could have been a guy to build around, but he's not. Porzingis, as I mentioned, the Knicks should build around him if they don't mess around and do something stupid and trade him.
Which is very probable it is the Knicks.
You're right. Stanley Johnson, Frank Kaminsky, Justice Winslow, they're just players. They're just guys. They're just guys in the league. They're never going to be anything other than just guys in the league. Looking down the rest of that list, I don't see anybody who stands out as somebody who's going to be a star.
I'll do even one better in terms of not just stand out. There's only two guys outside of the top 10 who, after now two seasons in the NBA, are even averaging double digits in points. That's Miles Turner, he went 11, and Devin Booker, who went 13.
Good catch. Good catch on both those. And then, of course, last year, and it's a little early to tell, obviously, but Ben Simmons, who did not even play because of an injury in his freshman or his rookie season, I should say, I think he's going to be a stud. I think that's a franchise-type guy. And that's really interesting with the Sixers having Embiid if he gets healthy, and Simmons. And, of course, now they have acquired the number one overall pick. If they get a point guard who can score, and also set guys up, that could be a real, you know, solid team in the near future. The process may have finally started to pay off a little bit, right?
I think it finally has, yeah.
Brandon Ingram, Jaylen Brown out of Cal, Dragan Bender, Chris Dunn, Buddy Hield, Jamal Murray, Marcus Chris, Jacob Pohu. I don't even remember that guy. Thon Maker. That's it. Those are the top 10.
And the only name that might jump out at some people, Buddy Hield, that sounds so familiar. He was just traded for Boogie Cousins.
That's right. That's right. He was a high scorer coming out of Oklahoma. But, of course, it's just, again, just going to be a piece, another player in the game. Brandon Ingram's got star power.
Yes.
He'll never be the star in Los Angeles, in part because they're going to be surrounded by some other guys that we just mentioned. And number two, he's just such a small, skinny, slight guy. If he puts on some weight and some strength.
Yeah.
And again, he's 20 now, right? I think 19 or 20?
Yeah.
If he puts on some strength the way, you know, other really, really super skinny guys did, like, for instance, Kevin Durant, who came out of Texas just a rail just like him, too. You need that to be able to take the pounding and do the things that it's going to take to get inside and score in the NBA without getting broken in half. If he does that, he's a star caliber player. But, again, the final point is we beat the living hell out of this dead horse. Is that in the top 10 of even last year's draft, Ben Simmons and maybe Brandon Ingram, and that's it. The rest of these guys, which would be considered in today's conversations right now on sports radio, huge, valuable pieces. Team X acquires the fourth overall pick from so-and-so, four-star player so-and-so, whose contract is going to be coming up. Boy, what a great deal is. They get the number four pick. Well, if the number four pick is Dragan Bender, really? Was it that big? If the number four pick is Jacob Poeltl or whoever it was from Austria that Toronto took at number nine, did they really, really do anything? So this idea that you can, and I think this is what we're finding out, outside of the Warriors, and while you give them credit for making the picks, I also have to, I can't see this in any other way than saying I think they're the recipients of some very good fortune. They're very lucky. They picked Steph Curry. They picked Klay Thompson. But never in their imaginations, wildest imaginations, did they think that both those guys would go on to be the tremendous shooters that they are. Two of the very best shooters maybe in the history of the game, transforming the way they, and in a larger sense the league, plays basketball. They were fortunate enough to draft them. And then in the second round they got Draymond Green, as mentioned. Congratulations to them, but that is the exception. That is not the rule.
Yep.
Beyond that, it's very, very, very hard to build a super team that can compete for a title in the 2017 NBA through the draft. You just don't do it. The Cavaliers drafted Anthony Bennett, got rid of him. Drafted Andrew Wiggins, traded him for a part who is ready right now. Drafted Kyrie Irving, and that's good. Drafted LeBron James way back in 2003. But by and large, the 76ers, too, drafted Jahlil Okafor, drafted Nerlens Noel, drafted Joel Embiid, three of the very similar type of players.
Yeah.
Only one of them's going to pan out.
True.
Really, big time, anyway. But they also drafted, who did they draft that they got rid of, the shooter?
Michael Carter-Williams.
Thank you. Michael Carter-Williams. So they, you know, it's very hard to say we're going to build a championship team through the draft in 2017 NBA. You're going to build a team in today's NBA through strategic trades and free agent signings when the salary caps expand due to TV contracts and those sorts of things, or else you're going to be left in the dust. Because these pieces that you're building with through the draft, quite simply, are just not reliable. As we just did detail through the last six NBA drafts in the top 10. They're just not reliable because it's almost impossible to figure out who in the hell is actually going to turn into a player. All right. Hey, congratulations, Jeremy Gill of Toledo. He's going to the fight to see Robert Easter Jr. defend his lightweight championship on June 30th at Huntington Center. That's all the time we've got, but don't go anywhere. Stay exactly where you are. I'm sure there's more NBA talk coming, maybe some baseball. We'll see what Mr. Jim Cushlin has planned as he sits in for Mike Miller on Drive Time, which is coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances. And get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.